And good afternoon, everybody. My name is Zeke. I'm here with Allison, Elizabeth, and Bettina. This is Movement Museum. It's 2:05. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on your cable dial, movement-museum.blogspot.com on your computer. And yeah, there it's in speaking beforehand. I knew that Allison, Elizabeth was getting nervous. Bettina's getting nervous now that I'm actually sitting down here. I'm the one that's shaking. So take a deep breath, and we have a poem. Yeah, it's called The Window by Leonard Cohen. Why do you stand by the window, abandoned in beauty? Let me start this again. Why do you stand by the window, abandoned to beauty and pride? The thorn of the night in your
in your bosom.
Yes. The spear of the age in your side. Lost in the rages of fragrance, lost in the rags of remorse, lost in the waves of a sickness that loosens the high silver nerves. O chosen love, O frozen love, O tangle of matter and ghost, O darling of angels, demons, and saints, and the whole broken-hearted host. Gentle this soul, and come forth from the cloud of unknowing, and kiss the cheek of the moon. The new Jerusalem glowing, why tarry all night in the ruin? And leave no word of discomfort, and leave no observer to mourn. But climb on your tears and be silent, like a rose on its ladder of thorns. O chosen love, O frozen love, then lay your rose on the fire give up to the sun give over to splendor, in the arms of the High Holy One, for the Holy One dreams of a letter, dreams of a letter of death. O bless the continuous stutter of the word being made into flesh. O chosen love, O frozen love, gentle this soul. And yeah, the reason I'm nervous and the reason I chose the poem is because Margie Gillis is in studio with us. And yeah, those last two lines, O bless the continuous stutter of the word being made into flesh, is, if I remember correctly, the mission statement, the quote.
It is the mission statement of the Margie Gillis Dance Foundation.
And
yes,
it was the sort of thing realized, yeah, it makes
and
sense.
I did dance to that one. Oh. I have actually danced to that piece. Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful. His poetry, and what a joy to know Leonard's work and know him.
Thank you very, very much for coming in.
Pleasure.
Yeah, who wants to start? I'm the one that's all shaky, so somebody else should take the microphone. You guys are all...
Well, we're all in awe. So, Margie, I'm sorry, I'm talking to the back of your head here, but the way we're all sitting in the studio. But we've all gone to see your filature... am I saying it right?
Filature, yes.
Piece, which is just
at the
wonderful.
Agora de la Danse.
Yes.
Yay, our wonderful theater.
So I was very struck at first of all, with all the meanings of thread. And one, because I was sitting down and I was just coming up with a few, like it's connections, it's ties, tethering, it's a narrative thread. What was your focus when you thought of thread? What was your starting point?
Well, originally I did a piece called By a Silver Thread for the last show I did, Embody 7, and a friend of mine was dying, and it was so hard not to be in New York with him. And I created this piece. We talked a lot about his process of leaving, and I created this piece so I could be with him spiritually as this was going on. He died 2 weeks after the piece was created, 3 weeks after the piece was premiered. Anyway, so I then thought I would continue with this notion of threads, because I was thinking about the heartstrings and the train of thought and your pathway in life and losing threads and what is woven and what is not woven and what is apparent and what is mythic and what is the presence of absence. Also the line through life that we take, where the road gets lost, where the road gets found, what happens in other dimensions. And I started also reflecting on memory. And when we're children, we're very, very close to the other dimension, and we're trying to accomplish in the world, but we feel very much a sense of the fairies and the magic and this sort of otherworldly realm. And as you get older, that begins to happen again. You are less engaged with what you accomplish in the world. It's interesting, it's whatever. It's you're still in and of the world, you're still matter and nature. But you have a better sense of this becomingness, this memory, this presence of absence, this other, the energies that of the spiritual dimension, I suppose, although I've always been keenly interested in that. But so I began my research in it, and I think that this is also historically a time of transition. And people are looking for a new, we need new representations of the image of new mythologies. I was lucky enough to know Joseph Campbell and hang out with him at the Theater of the Open Eye in New York. And I remember him recently, I'd danced, and he'd come up to me afterwards and said, "Do you know what you're doing?" And I proudly looked at him and said, "No, don't you think that's a good idea?" And he acquiesced and nodded and kissed me on the cheek and said, "Yes, at the moment it's a very good idea." But I think I'm lucky to have had all that in my history. But I think as a planet, we're in a really strong period of transition, and we need to be looking at new paradigms and need to be co-creating new paradigms of images that will work and allow us to move into the new century and into a new era properly. I think the calling, the need is there. We haven't yet responded fully, and it's going to be fascinating. I mean, the younger generation right now is just, I mean, it's a thrilling, thrilling time to start engaging with the world and with your imagination.
So the inspiration for your pieces doesn't just come from you and your life experience. You also take a lot from your environment.
Well, yes, I'm definitely reflecting on the world as well. I think even being apolitical is political. From a political vantage point, yeah, I'm extremely discouraged with the state of affairs and with the Harper government and with the fact that information is getting out in a very, very manipulated and muted way, and things that are of value to a society are really being thrown aside, but in a masked way. It's all being obscured. And I think people are with that. They feel that in their skin, and they feel the need. Obviously, you know, we've got an oil slick going on. We've got nuclear proliferation, where we're disposing of our the planet we live on at an insane, insane rate, and we are still so incredibly ego oriented as to what am I accomplishing, or what am I getting? Oh, how is my day going? What am I having? And I think the sense of service and these new paradigms need to be researched. I think for me also the filature is a piece of transition for me as well. So it's an investigation. There is not, in fact, in the end, there's a really, for me, it's a return to source. Many people have read it as a dying, but for me, it's a very, if it's dying, it's the best of dying. It's the dying to be reborn.
It's a change. Yeah. Dying is a change.
Yes,
right?
Transformation. We die in this world to be born in another dimension.
Reborn in a different form, or just recycled in one way or the other.
Exactly.
I'm all for recycling.
Yeah. That's it. That's the one. And that wonderful replenishment of the soul, the renewal, and coming to an excitement again about what is possible for us as human beings. And not everything has been invented yet. So it's going to be so thrilling to see what humans are capable of, what great love can do.
And I love that quote that I found, where you said it's like being a drop of water that suddenly becomes aware of being in the ocean. I thought that was really beautiful. This is really that when you talk about being at your place in your life, that you have that second wave of awareness. Is that what you meant?
Yes, very, very much so. It's very present. It's a very strong feeling. And I actually, it just is. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I noticed was that, this is, as far as I can tell, please correct me if I'm wrong, first piece of yours that has an English title and a French title.
No. But that's not true. But in fact, they had two titles because we thought we were going to do two different versions. Originally, I was supposed to open at Agora, but have a world premiere at the National Arts Center. I got very sick. I took the H1N1 virus so I wouldn't get sick and was trashed for like 10 weeks. So we had to postpone. And the Agora Theater has been so gracious to allow me to create the piece in there and to be able to... And it has embraced the work, and just Francine Bernier, who runs the theater, is just remarkable. And if you haven't gone to the Agora, go see some of the wonderful, magical things that are going on in dance in our city. It's a great theater, very intimate, very beautiful black box. So that is how and of course also the name of the work has to be, you have to submit that a year in advance. So that was, it happened to be a day when my French wasn't working out real well. Otherwise, really, the name is Villiatur. But like secret is secret, secret, okay. Secret. And so I often try to find words that are in both languages. Or sometimes I just title in French instead because I find it mostly a more beautiful language than English.
That's why one of the reasons why, at least I'm here, I assume it's one of the reasons why an awful lot of other people here is because just French is to me amazing.
Yes.
I wonder just the way you end up thinking because you have to speak French is just...
Yes, isn't it thrilling to get different viewpoints and to live in different viewpoints? So I go to the English news, I go to BBC, I go to CBC Canada, I go to the American channels, I go to CNN, and then I go to, all the French channels, and you get all these wonderful different perspectives, and we're so lucky, so very, very, very lucky. I know that many people consider it, it's a nuisance to have to learn another language, but it's a thrill. We should all be so lucky. And of course, in Europe, everybody speaks many, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight languages. It's not a strange thing.
And then, since I was wrong the first time, I figured let's get all the wrongness out of the way at the beginning. In doing research on this, knowing that you did spend an awful lot of your childhood in Oregon, and there are similarities between your dance and Loie Fuller's dances in a sort of...
Yes, fabric.
Did you ever go to the Maryhill Museum as a child?
No, I was, my parents are Olympic skiers, and my dad was all about the ski hills, and I was there from the age of 2 until 7, 8. So my time in Oregon was literally about running in the woods and, being a wild child.
Because that to me would have been just absolutely...
Wouldn't that have been me? That would have been
perfect, because out that she went out to the middle of Oregon and realizing it's a whole lot of stuff that happened in Oregon about the middle of last century that just is wild.
Yes.
In terms of granted my geography isn't that great, but Trisha Brown is in Washington, which is about 4 hours away.
Yeah.
And I'm figuring there's something in the water or something in the air at that time.
Oh, it's really beautiful. One of my strongest memories is skating on Crater Lake, and you could see the fish swimming through the ice. The ice was just crystal clear, and we're skating, watching the fish swim. What a beautiful, beautiful thing to be able to have and do. I lived inland. I lived at the edge of the desert. So a George O'Keefe type of atmosphere was part of my coloring. And but I was born in Montreal, and glad that I am here.
Yes. Allison, Elizabeth, we got to get you on microphone.
Mike, okay, calm down. First question, I guess. Does reading about you and learning about how much of a free spirit you are, what is it that attracts you to collaborate or dance for other people? What is it that, is it the contrast or the...
Yeah, I definitely feel a calling to perform, to share. Originally, the experiment was, is love possible? Was the original question that came to me. Is love possible? By that I mean, can two people feel the same thing at the same time? Within the last year, and I answered that with yes. and started to perform so that your neuromuscular system could go through the same storyline as mine. And within the last year, finally the medical journals have come out with the fact that something that many, many performers, long before I took to the stage or was even born, knew for to be very, very true, is that we do share a very profound experience when we are in space together going through a ritualized experience. So that it's different on YouTubes. It's wonderful. All of that is wonderful. But being in presence is a remarkable thing, and the medical industry is now just putting out that indeed, if you go to a dance performance, you will have the similar neuromuscular response that the dancer is going through. So it's very, from a health paradigm, from a health perspective, it's an incredibly healthy, wonderful thing to do. But to me, what philosophically that answers is that yes, it is possible for you and I to feel the same thing and to share profoundly, neuromuscularly, the same identical storyline. Now you may gather, your brain may organize the information and come up with a different result or a different sentence structure or a different notion than mine will, but nonetheless, we have in this area of transformation the ability to exchange on a very profound and healing level. That thrills me. So that's why I perform, is in order to engage in that mystery and in that miracle. I love dancing in nature, and I love dancing just for myself. It is, I just within the last year realized, in a way, it's my kind of praying. It's where I go to feel heightened and completely alive and awake in the world and with who I am, and to understand. And I also develop a third person sort of visioning on myself. I can see myself dancing, I see what I'm saying, see who I am, and I can move into the witness position for myself. So basically, I have to say, after all this time, really, love is as simple or as complicated as that is the underlying principle for what I'm focused on and what I'm doing, you know, and then it just sort of gets complicated and expands from there.
So is there a compromise when you have somebody choreograph on your body or when you produce work that isn't solo work?
Not necessarily. I think as a dancer, it's really helpful if you develop your look at what it is that you like. So me, I like storyline and emotion and energy and spirituality. So if a choreographer is going to come to me and they come from a similar vantage point, then obviously we're going to kind of have a basis of conversation that's going to work. If they come at me strictly from a technical vantage point, I knew Merce, I've worked with Paul, I've been very honored to know some really remarkable people in dance and to work with them, and If someone comes at you from another vantage point like that, you will have that challenge, and they will have that challenge too, but it's always best to know in advance whether you're up for a challenge, whether you're coming from different storylines, or whether you have a similar a bond already. When I first went to New York and saw the Limon Company, my brother had gone to New York and was dancing with Limon, and then afterwards entered the Taylor Company for 18 years, and I remember looking at the stage and going, that's my dance. Those are my moves. Mm-hmm. I had, in my isolation, created those, you know, and there's certainly the Jungian synchronicity and all of that sort of thing. So I think it depends on viewpoint. And literally, neuromuscularly, you can dance anything in the dictionary, anything that you, any idea. It's how you craft it, how you stick with it, how you let the miracle change you. I like to go in on a piece and watch the psychology create the structure, create the architecture. So if you have very linear thought process, chances are you're going to create one movement after another, after another, after another, and the floor pattern is going to be horizontal and quite simple, you know, and clear. You go, you know, down this way for five counts, over there for 10 or whatever, and then, and you create the piece that way. Whereas if it's a piece about feelings and it's vague and about mystery, or you're not sure, or foreboding or whatever, you don't really know. So the piece can take an awful long time to get created, and you kind of have a little section over here, and you maybe know the beginning, and maybe it's a little bit more up and down, fall and recovery, kind of spatial thing. There's no real straight lines in it. It's all searching and wandering. So the architecture becomes developed out of the psychology of the piece. But basically, that all sounds very like high-minded, and it is. It's wonderful. I mean, that's the exciting thing about dance. Every bit of you gets engaged. It's a litmus test for absolutely everything you are, for your thinking, your emotion, your feeling, your body, the whole thing. Whole shebang is out there, right? So it's so engaging. The more intellect you have, ooh, juicy and delicious. You know, the body wisdom can surpass that, and then the mind gets to organize. So you can literally go in for everything. Often one of the problems is to keep it simple and just allow yourself to do one bit and then the next bit. It's so exciting, especially with first choreographies. You sort of want to do the whole thing all at once. And what I love also is to allow a choreography to create the next question. So I engage fully in sort of a very loving piece, and then the next piece, suddenly there's a need or to research or to release sorrow, or to then maybe it's all about construct and intellect and social political information, so that each piece has kind of a the human spirit sort of moves in a natural wave. We're ready for certain things at certain times. So what is it I'm called to explore? Exploring that. And then once that's done and I've allowed that to live, then naturally there's something missing. That thing that's missing is the beginning of the next piece. Often I'll do about, I'm working on about 5 or 6 or 7 pieces all at the same time too, just because I'm curious. And I do a lot of things that you're not supposed to be able to do, just because I'm also curious. I don't think I'm that rude. I'm just curious.
So if you're working on 5 or 6 or 7 pieces, that means you're going to be dancing till like 150?
Well, I don't know that I'll be on stage. This could be the last time. I'm not sure. It's very demanding to be on stage, and the amount of work that it takes and the dedication, and you need the support of your community around you. And to get out there, or to also, if you can't tour a lot, you don't get to hone the work, you don't get to live it as a performer, and that's a really exciting and important dimension to it. I love doing this. I really, really love it. And when it's happening, people engage with it very profoundly. So I would like to continue that. On the other hand, it can be very, very demanding. And I've been through 7 years where I had to do a lot of administration. Right now, I've got good people around me. It's great. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I will always be dancing, however, and I will always be researching, because this is my art. This is not only my art, this is my life. This is the way I see life. Also, at this time, I'm engaging with Michel Le Baron. We're working on some new paradigms for conflict resolution. And in July, I get to go to CESFI in Switzerland. And she works in conflict resolution and has written several books and works in the field and is quite high-powered within it in Washington, D.C. and Vancouver. And she is bringing together 25 people who work in conflict resolution from the diplomatic level, a high diplomatic level where you're just sitting around the table, to people who work with the child soldiers in Somalia, people who are in the field in Afghanistan, in Palestine, in different places, people who work on the abortion issue. And what we're looking at is new paradigms using the movement, using physical dynamics to get into this transcendent space where you shift out of conflict into transcendence, and which allows people to shift their perspective. Anyway, We're working on it with some neural people, and anyway, it's all lovely and wonderful and exciting and thrilling. And she had come to my classes and found that the way I teach, which is rather unique, has been helpful for her in her work. So these people are going to challenge me and challenge my ideas, and we're going to see if we can come up with movement motifs that will assist them. The dynamics of nature, the dynamics of motion is such that you transform. And if you do, then you have creative solution, and the mind engages from a space of mystery. You have to go to the mystery, you have to be in I don't know in order to find out what. The more time we spend in I know, convinced of that, the less time we actually spend in transformation and discovery. So the paradigm of creation and discovery and transformation, and we're using these things and finding motifs and patternings for them. So that's kind of thrilling to be of service to that community. That's like, for me, that's like huge. Yay, let's go, you know, save the world. Oh, yay, it's right up my alley.
although there, it's I'm fascinated by the idea of using dance and movement for conflict resolution. Mm-hmm. Although the first thing that sort of jumps out to my mind is the sort of dance competition, stuff like Bust a Move that's happening at Tohu this weekend, whereas you sort of have, as opposed to the Jets versus the Sharks with shivs, and these days even things
but
worse.
Yeah, but look at those people are really looking at conflict. They're mm-hmm. really looking at competition and conflict. So in fact, wouldn't it be fascinating to then engage them in how do you shift that parameter? So, because you know the parameter. I mean, they're going after the parameter. They're going right to it. You know, that's where is that source of conflict? Where is that point of contact and immobility? You know, and who gets to bust out of it? So if they're experimenting with that, that's excellent, because then hopefully they'll be able to change that and see its opposite as well and understand. But just aggression is fantastic. It's just got to be used properly.
Get it channeled.
Use it properly. Use it excitingly. I personally am not into the competition thing. I come from a family that did that and does that, and I respect it. But I just am more interested in sort of the greater coming together.
When you teach, do you teach more dancing? Do you teach choreography?
No, it's pretty much who's dancing and how you're dancing and creation forms, and it comes from a health parameter and philosophical parameter. And it's definitely dance. It's a series of games that I've developed. I'm actually going to be teaching my first workshop on the West in Montreal in quite some time, on the West Island on I think it's the 16th of May. Anyway, it's on my website. And so if people are interested, it's a very different way it's a different focus.
So you're innovative also in the way of teaching, not just in the way of dancing and choreography.
Yeah, I did kind of start a little wacky and have continued doing things in a bit of a different way than most people.
It's a way of sharing the love.
Well, yes, exactly. I mean, that's I just get curious and engaged at how best to do it, and then all these new forms develop around that, and this experimentation. Mm-hmm. And of course, dance is wonderful. I mean, this is, you've got your body, you're in a room. What a better place to experiment. It's really fun. But you've got to be willing to be a loser too, right? You got to be willing to be a loser, because otherwise it gets all too precious and all too big. So you got to go in, and the more you can kind of just go in and jump in and see what comes out and engage with it and love it, and you'll look at it and go, what is this? And see the compassion in it for yourself as well. I think that this compassion for oneself, and when you are compassionate for yourself as a choreographer and as a dancer, you will reach that humanity in your audience.
Wow. On that note from earlier, you are so, you know, big now. What, from your perspective, can you see the influence you've had on?
It's really fun. I mean, certainly, you know, as an artist, one aspires to a certain kind of obsolescence. You want the world to be a certain way, and so when it is, then of course your work will be obsolete because it won't be necessary. But I do see that there have been changes in the world that I know are because of things that I put out there and focuses that I set forward. Just as Isadora Duncan made changes that if you think of people walking around in a Victorian age, all corseted, and there was this amazing dancer running around half naked, screaming, beauty, beauty, nature, nature. And then you look at what we're doing in the streets now, what kind of clothes we wear that are comfortable, how we move our bodies, with what freedom. She really had an effect. She didn't have an effect, she had an effect on people who could make change. And that's very different, I think, from the sort of the democratic kind of focus we've got now going on, which is interesting. It's just a new form, new time, new era, new epoch. And everyone is just, you just jump on into life and see where you can be of service and see where it engages your heart and your imagination.
Specific to the dance world, we were talking to Vincent Warren a little while back, mm-hmm. and he was discussing how there's a lack of understanding of history, and that people are reinventing the wheel as they choreograph these days.
Yes.
So it must be refreshing to see that some of it is coming through, that some of it is changing.
I think it is changing, and I think there is the reinventing the wheel. It's true, people don't know the history, and I mean, often things that I see people inventing things that I have already invented, so to speak, but then I'm sure the generations before me saw that as well. But it is true to their era, and it is also important to be stupid, I think, when you're young. You have to be. You don't know anything, nor should you. I mean, you don't know everything, nor should you. You're going to come to the end of your life and still only know a portion of what is available and what will be available generations from now. But how you engage with this curiosity and with this knowledge is unique and important. And everyone is living their own era and their own time. So what is true for you in love, and true for me in love or in certain kinds of experimentation or certain kinds of traditionalism with dance, are those things exactly themselves, but they'll have a different manifestation for you because you have a different audience to speak to. Mm. And even if that audience is just the present moment, a sense of spirituality, even if you're just in a room and alone, like a tree in a woods. You know, there's that thing is, if a tree in the woods falls and nobody's there to hear it, does it make a sound? I mean, you know, that's an arrogant, stupid question. You know, the tree fell. It's the tree's business. It's life. You know, it's what you think you have to be there in order for life to take place. That's impossible. We are unique and isolated. We need to love and need to share in the best way we can. Hold space for what is beautiful. Invent what is beautiful. Relook at it. What is beauty? What is love? What is it now? What is it now again? Be quick to it. Be alive to it. And reinvent it. Re-know it. Re-engage in it. Re-hold a place for it.
Okay. Can we take a break there? Because we do have an ad. We got to do some official business. This is Movement Museum. CKUT 90.3 FM. 91.7 on your cable dial, movement-museum.blogspot.com on your computer. It's 2:37, and we will be back with Margie Gillis just after this. And we're back. My name is Zeke. I'm here with Allison Elizabeth and Bettina. This is Movement Museum, talking about dance on your computer, on your radio, in the ether, Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, the whole thing. And then, this music in the background is by the Arboreal Quartet. It's actually, given half of what I've been hearing, the 1 year that I've been listening to it, I personally give it a stamp of approval for what it's worth. But we're here for the last little bit with Margie Gillis. And before we had taken the break and before we actually started the show, you talked about how you were taking this show and going off to Edmonton.
Yes, next year I'll be in St. Albert. In Edmonton and in Vancouver. It's all being negotiated now. The next thing I do is a gala in St. Louis. Then I go to Vancouver to choreograph for Ballet BC, where I'm mentoring the new artistic director of Emily Molnar, who is just a joy and a pleasure. What a great mind. Oh my God, what a gift to dance she is. And then I do the Switzerland thing. I'm back here in Montreal working with the Springboard, which is a lot of students from Juilliard who come up and work in Montreal, because of the different modern dance paradigms here. Then what do? I go off to Germany. I'm dancing in Germany. So a lot of different stuff.
One of the things that I noticed, and then I'm probably going to be wrong again, but in looking through where you have danced, and this we sort of touched on briefly when I made the, biased, and bigoted comment about the amount of culture that I thought there was in Edmonton, is that also I noticed that there's also, when you tour, you do the outskirts of North America. And yes, you have done Texas, and there is St. Louis, and there is Minneapolis, but there's not an awful lot of the middle.
Of Canada?
Of North America. It's the sort of thing.
Wow. 2-3 years ago, I did Winnipeg, and I did Regina. But yeah, it's really tough in English Canada. Here in Quebec, we're lucky with the notion that the arts are part of life and are important quality of life, and give you a chance of looking at life in a more sacred way, or engaging with life. You have the art of life, the art of cuisine, the art of sport, the art of opening your door, you know, the art of everything. In English Canada, it's more of a hobby. And it is often devalued, and which is really, really, really sad. I think it leads to a lot more kind of a vapidness. There's wonderful people all across Canada doing extraordinary things, but I think there's a real lack of understanding of the value that culture has, and the place that it can take, the role it can take in fulfilling people and keeping people out of the void of consumerism and this sense of lost spiritual soulness that we have, that can only be people are trying to fill it up by just grabbing things and living this me life. And I think that the arts show you how to, or help you engage with curiosity at the world around you, and not just at yourself and what you want, but how you see the world and what's coming at you, and what's in nature, and what's in your neighbors, and what's in your house, and what's in the air, and what you are engaging with, not just give me more. So I'm really, you know, I think it's very sad that what's happened, the whole Bush years and Harper and all of this is really discouraging, I find. But then hopefully the paradigm changes. Hopefully this new reemergence is going to happen. Hopefully we are in a period of transition, and there is a new day of dawning.
Yeah, no, I've been finding as I get older, I realize I can now, old enough to see that the pendulum does swing back and forth.
Yeah.
And it goes from very bad to very, very good. And, I think we're slowly, I can see that we sort of bottomed out and seems to be slowly cresting somewhere.
Well, I must say, though, that as a woman, most of the religions and most of the world history is very patriarchal, and we're just getting a fingerhold. So if you look at it from a world perspective, it's very tenacious. And from a historical perspective, it's very, very tenacious what we have. And it is my hope that the new generation of men and women will hold a place for that and hold a respect for that, and that we'll be able once again to recreate or create or come up with a new paradigm, a new dialogue with what is sacred, with what is mythic, with what is imagery, with what is symbol, with who we are and what our spirituality needs to be in order to live a sustained life in relationship to nature, because we lose nature, we off the planet. If there's no planet, there's no us. Not as we know it, anyway.
I was very interested in your notion of archetypes. It's something that you'd mentioned in your work. It's part of Filature. You describe the archetypes in your work, like the young lover and the older woman who stands in for nature. Which archetype do you occupy?
Oh. The searcher, many, actually. I shift in and out and in and out and in and out of several different archetypes during the course of the piece. And mainly, though, it's a searching. It's a searching.
Yeah, it's that how you connect yourself to the rest of the planet, because then we all look for the same archetypes. If you're interested in Joseph Campbell and Jung, that is sort of their thinking, very similar.
Yes, yes, and I do think that you know, it's I think it's very, very exciting to engage with that. And I think if I am if I was going to engage with any religion, it would probably be Sufism.
Right,
because the concept of the beloved and the sense of passion and poetry, I relate to that very. There's something visceral about that for me, very visceral. And in fact, again, the young boy is the beloved. He is the representation of the beloved from that vantage point, from a spiritual vantage point.
And then, since our time is almost up, Alice and Elizabeth, do you have any last question?
I have one last question, but I think you've probably been bored to death with this one already. But how has dancing changed for you as you've grown older? What have you gained? What have you lost?
Oh, it's deepened. It's a difficult métier. And I think most people don't do solo dance because you have to look at your shadow self. You have to go in the room and all the monsters want to eat you. It's also exhausting because it's solo work. So in fact, you do get, exhaustion and you have to deal with that. And that's hard. You have to sit in the room as a creator and you have to accept the parts of yourself that you don't want to accept. And find your humanity in order to move through. And it's tough. Artistry engages the whole human being, top to bottom. It's not just an aspect. So you have to make you have to live some tough hours in order to get to the beauty. But I'm grateful for it. I love it. I love doing what I do. I love dancing. I love the dialogue. I love the conversation. I love the process. I couldn't do other. I couldn't live other. I'm flung into this by my passion and by my curiosity. How I've aged or changed or transformed. Certainly when I was young, I learned like a child, which is very much like sport. You learn, it's a goal, and you learn that goal, and then you move to the next goal and the next. Then the work became wild and strong, and I had physical prowess, and I could run into walls and bounce off of buildings and fall downstairs or fall upstairs and do miraculously crazy things. Then the work became more refined and more delicate. And now I'm much more engaged with the energy of it as I watch my skin separate from my bones, separate from my muscle, and I feel this sense of the otherworldliness being part of what I'm engaging with more and more and more. And of course, I mean, I look in the mirror and I go, oh my God, who's that? You know, I mean, I don't recognize me, and then, oh yes, there I am, yes. So it's a new me. I look different, and purposefully I actually let my hair go gray. I had a gray slash of hair on my head, and under the lights it looked like I had a hole in my head, so my lighting designer asked me to dye my hair, and everybody thought I had red hair, so I did. You know, okay, fine, I'll dye it red. And but then I decided to just let it go, because a few people said to me that I looked very young on stage, and it's true, I look all sorts of ages on stage, but they thought it was artifice. So what I like is I like doing that naturally. There are moments on stage where I absolutely look 85 or 95 or 100, and there's other moments where I look quite young. So I like that. I like also the sense of glamour as the ability to transform from the inside out. That is compelling to me, very compelling. And just a last note for myself, just about how wonderful Vincent Warren is, and what a great, great thing he's doing, trying to preserve the archives of what's happening in dance in Quebec, archives that are being lost, dances and masterpieces that are disappearing. People not knowing, having access to the history of what has gone on here, and what is celebrated around the world that we have and that we own and that we are engaged in. And also Vincent, I mean, he's just a great, noble heart and a phenomenal, phenomenal dancer.
I have lots more questions, but we have run out of time, so I'll figure out some other time and some other way to ask you them. Hopefully you'll be able to come back at some point. And yes, thank you very,
thank you very, very,
very,
very
much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We should say that you're still going to dance until the 8th of May.
Yes, yeah, tonight and two more nights.
Wow, so get your tickets now.
And
run,
it's at
run.
L'Agora de la Danse, which is 8:40 Charrier. Showtime is at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
Unfortunately, I don't know how much tickets are. But don't let me help.
Entre $26 et $35.
Merci beaucoup. Ça, c'est Nicolas Sado, who is responsible for getting everything organized. Merci à vous, Nicolas. Thank you again.
Thank you.
This is Movement Museum. It's 250 CKUT, 90.3 FM, 91.7 on your cable dial, and movement-museum.blogspot.com on your computer. We will be back momentarily. It's 2:52. My name is Zeke. I'm here with Bettina and Allison Elizabeth talking about dance on the radio. And as we discussed or mentioned in that sort of musical interlude, all the air has left the room. Suddenly it's just a whoosh.
Oh, the anticlimax.
A big come down.
Margie has left the building.
Yes, yes. Now, I had a whole whack of questions. I wanted to know about this guy. Do you know Daniel Nagrin at all?
No.
Mm-mm. Apparently he was a solo dancer along, do you know Loie Fuller?
Yes.
Okay. Similar, not in style, as far as I know. I've only read about three articles and they're all on the internet, and so I have no idea if the truth or not, but it's sort of thing where he was one of those solo dancers in the 40s or 50s, and then from the Visage de la Danse talk that Margie Gillis gave, it was the sort of thing that suddenly Daniel Nagrin was influential to her, and given that I'd never heard of him before and he looked like quite a character, I wanted to ask her about that. I wanted to ask her about going to China in 1979, because in her bio it always says she was the first dancer ever to go to China, first modern dancer ever to go to China.
And she introduced it.
Mm-hmm. And then it doesn't explain anything like how long, where she went, what the experience was like.
Did she meet Wen Wei Wang?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then there's also, that's the other nice little duality, is that Loie Fuller was the first modern dancer to go to Europe. Wow. And so I like that sort of nice little dovetail. They each are breaking geographic boundaries. But such is...
We'll just have to have her back.
Yeah, we're going to have to, I don't know, when she does the workshop on May 16th, we're going to have to talk to her about, so as we can mm-hmm. promote, we can hype, we can do workshop stuff, and got to come back. So you survived?
I survived. That was wonderful.
As I've said, I'm going to try and just step it up until you are just a complete and consummate pro.
So I can handle my celebrities, is that it?
That's right.
I think you did very well. I was the one who was going to ask for an autograph.
Yeah. Well, that was wonderful.
So yeah, we got 5 minutes, and we got a whole whack of dance that's happening here in town this weekend. Mm-hmm.
There's the Toronto Dance Theater that are here doing Dissolver, with a whole bunch of slashes and brackets in the title.
You sure it's not Désolvé?
Désolvé, maybe it is.
Oh, it's Toronto. No, they're from Toronto.
Mm-hmm. Maybe
they can't speak French.
It's a choreography by Christopher House, and it's happening the 6th, 7th, and the 8th of May at 8 o'clock at Salle Pierre Mercure.
Mercure, yes.
Mercure.
Yes, sort of like Mercury, but not quite.
Mercure.
Which is on Saint-Denis in between Saint-Guinée. No, it's on de Maisonneuve in between Saint-Guinée and Saint-Denis. I don't know the exact address of the building, though. Right across the street from the Cinémathèque.
You can also just find it at the Place des Arts website,
yes.
I'm sure.
Uh-huh. No. It's not part of Place des Arts.
Oh.
No, don't be confusing people.
Okay,
I've heard people where we've had stuff at Salle Mercure where people have sort of dashed in and sort of like knocked my knees silly just because they sort of confused.
They went to
Place des Arts, mm-hmm. got the parking, and then suddenly went, where are our tickets? And yeah, it is sort of Salle Maisonneuve and Salle Pierre Mercure. Somebody should be talking about naming stuff, although the whole complex itself is named after Pierre Pelliot.
Oh, yeah, I've been there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There is something happening, though, at Place des Arts tonight, which is -1. I think are we all going to this tonight?
Am I going to see
all of you? Yeah, I'm going.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to see it on Saturday.
Oh, okay. So I'm just going to see Allison there. So that's by the Grand Ballet Canadien de Montréal, and it looks very, very interesting. Choreography by Ohad Naharan, if somebody knows him.
The lucky friend that I'm taking with me was just overjoyed when she heard his name, so she knows him.
Okay.
He sounds like he's a very impressive choreographer.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to that, and we'll talk about it soon.
Yes, now next week we have I'm going to space on her name, but there's the We Are Robots that's happening at the SAT.
Yes.
On Friday.
Which is... I think it's Manon Olney.
Yes, Manon.
Oligny, Olney. Although I'm mispronouncing it or I'm just completely chopping it up, something fierce. That's at the SAT tomorrow.
Is it not HEC?
No, they're based out of there, but they moved it.
Oh, okay.
Because they wanted much more...
The SAT is a great venue for this.
No, and this isn't a show, right? This is a party?
No, it's a show.
Oh.
With a party, with the advantage being that the after party is at the same place as the show.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So that might be an extra selling point there for people.
And it is the sort of thing where it is a robotic choreography in terms of she has choreographed done a dance for these machines. And I'm quite annoyed that I'm not going to be able to make it. But it is the sort of thing, it looks very, very interesting.
Yeah, I'm going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Check it out.
And now, all the air has gone out of here. I guess we should just take a nap or something.
Yeah, primetime is here, so yes. He's going to bring some good vibes.
Mm-hmm. And positive vibes.
Yes.
And then, actually, Allison Elizabeth, I can ask you one of the questions that I did want to ask Margie Gillis.
Yeah, I'll just pretend to be here for a second.
No.
Just pretend to be amazing.
Where do you get your dance news from? Because I'm constantly searching for that.
Oh, I love the RQD website.
Okay,
because... Because
to me, it was the sort of thing,
events.
Doing research for coming in today was sort of like realizing that back in the 70s and 80s, there was like full pages devoted to dance in the newspaper.
Papers, yeah.
And everybody at the time read Time magazine. You made the cover of Time magazine. Yeah, Loie Fuller. I learned in this that Loie Fuller was the first woman to make the cover of Time magazine.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And she's one of the reason I asked about the Maryhill Museum. She founded it, and then there's a whole display about her. Then it's someplace about an hour and a half out of where Margie Gillis grew up as a child. But it's the sort of thing where mainstream press nowadays is like you look on the TV news, you look on anything, it's boing boing, and it doesn't have anything about dance. And so trying to search that out, and I realized there are like specialized magazines, Dance Current.
Yeah, I do read Dance Current every month too.
And that's stuff helpful. Like that, but it is... I can't help but thinking it's just been niched out.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's
definitely.
While it does give news, just by being niched out, it becomes less and less relevant. And so, yeah, I'm trying to find out where, what, and how. But we will save that discussion for another day. See, you can do Margie Gillis. You answered that beautifully. Bettina, Allison, Elizabeth, thank you very, very much for making me look way better than I have any right to. My name is Zeke. It's 3 o'clock. We got Positive Vibes coming up, and you've been listening to Movement Museum, where we talk about dance on your computer, radio, and just in the air.